Okay. So was the worst damage done in Grand Haven?
There was damage all across the state of Michigan.
Okay.
I mean, that was probably the most visual for us.
Okay.
But there was a 250-mile line of, it was like a bulldozer came through and just knocked down everything in its path.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. And I remember, now that I think about it, I went down to my basement to sleep on the couch because those winds were so loud and had no idea what was going to happen. And then just seeing the devastation, in the morning, with what happened. But that was a phenomenal experience.
Now, we had a very narrow miss last summer.
Okay.
You probably don't remember it because it didn't affect us, but you may recall that the Washington, D.C. area early last summer got hit very hard, very exact same type of storm, which developed just west of South Bend, Indiana.
Okay.
It came off of the lake breeze. There was a thunderstorm complex that blew up just off of the lake breeze coming in off of Lake Michigan, turned into this monster thunderstorm and just took off across northern Indiana, central Ohio, through the Appalachians, and then slammed into the D.C. area about 12 hours later.
Yeah, I do remember that. I think they were evacuating like the Capitol and stuff like that.
Yes, it was.
So there's a lot of chatter on social media about that. Now, have you had the opportunity to go to places like Kansas, Oklahoma to do storm chasing at all?
Not yet, but I did have a chance to go see the Mecca of Storm Central, and that is the Storm Prediction Center in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
Went there a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Visited their facility. What a phenomenal place that is. Anybody who's any kind of a weather aficionado, that is the place to go. They have got some really cool stuff there.
And what stuck out for you most there?
Well, all of the storm chasing tools that they have.
Okay.
They're just like the storm chasers in Twister, in the movie the Twister. And the coolest thing that I saw this time around was their Doppler radar on wheels.
Oh, wow.
They actually have not just the typical radar that you may imagine with a dish that kind of rotates around. That's our typical Doppler radar. This was what's called a phased array radar, which is just like a big TV panel that sits on the side of the truck, doesn't even move, just sends out the radar signal, and it comes back, and it's processed by the onboard processors.
Okay.
Doesn't move, doesn't rotate around, takes a snapshot of the storm, and processes all that information at one time.
Wow.
What's the difference? When that radar that we currently use goes round and round, takes anywhere from maybe 2 to as much as 6 minutes to create a picture. Well, this phased array radar takes a snapshot, and it's available within about 30 to 40 seconds.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
Well, you really need it out there.
You do. And that's going to be the next generation radar that will come out, probably in about another 15 to 20 years if we get the funding for it.
Okay.
And it's going to be amazing.
Wow. So it's kind of a coming soon for what you saw out there.
Yeah. And wow, that's just totally amazing stuff.
Now, you're pretty active on social media, like Facebook and Twitter. How do you feel social media has been helpful to you as well as weather reporting?
Never been better.
Okay.
Never been better. We're in constant contact with anyone. Anyone that has a cell phone, a smartphone, a computer. And because smartphones are in the hands of people, they don't have to run to a telephone. They don't have to run to some place to report weather from out in the field. They can just put their hashtag. And if we're searching that particular hashtag, it shows up immediately on our feed.
Right.
And we have a real good handle on what's happening right now.
Okay.
Facebook is an awesome tool for sharing video and pictures. And so that's part of our mission now, is that we incorporate that into all of our broadcasts. Show me a picture of how much snow you had. Stick a yardstick in it. Well, okay, I see you have 15 inches of snow.
And I think I've seen a couple times where you found out on a touchdown on a tornado because a viewer went out on their back porch and shot a picture of the thing.
Absolutely.
So you knew to, you know, talk about, I think maybe it was in Coopersville or something, you know, that folks in that area may want to, you know, hit their basement. So
absolutely.
So it really seems to me like a great reporting mechanism when you involve the public in that.
Back in the day, it was a phone call. We had an 800 number.
Right.
You know, got real sophisticated. They could send us an email.
Right, right.
It's hard to do when the power is out.
But now,
though,
if you got a picture of it, you can see something
absolutely.
That they can't see. I mean, you can probably tell that this is this type of a cloud or this type of a formation, so you're going to be able to read into that a little bit more than a phone call or an email would tell you.
And the next revolution, well, it's already happening, is Skype and FaceTime.
Yes.
On the Apple products, and now they can call us and say, hey, can you tell me what I'm seeing?
Right.
And they'll hold the phone up.
Right. You can tell them to run.
Yes, go hide, please.
Now, you've done your Lessons in Science program for kids. What are some of the things that kids are most intrigued about science and weather?
Well, mostly they're intrigued by, you know, the destructive weather.
Okay.
You know, I was intrigued by that when I was seven.
Sure.
They're always wanting to know what the storms are going to do, where they're going to go, why do they happen. They're all the kids are all very, very inquisitive. And
is it more fear or intrigue?
At that age, it's more intrigue.
Okay.
Kids are fearless.
This is true.
Most kids are fearless. They, I think they pick up on fear from the adults that are around them. Now, I have two kids. They're all grown up.
Okay.
But we used to go storm chasing.
All right.
With the kids in the car.
Awesome.
Well, in the car seats.
Okay. Well, got to be careful.
And they, you know, they saw that we were intrigued, interested, but never panicky. So I don't witness this in their adult life. Whenever there's bad weather, they're very calm, very conscientious about what's going on, but there's never any fear or panic.
Okay.
Because they kind of know a little bit about what's going on.
Did either of them go into the weather profession?
No, they saw all the long hours I worked and all the crazy things I did. One is in advertising in Detroit, and another one is still at Michigan State, going into the hospitality business.
Okay. Now, we've had a lot in the news with meteorites and asteroids. What's the difference between those?
Well, there's three. There's meteors, asteroids, and meteorites.
Okay.
Let's start with the thing that went into Russia.
Yes.
Here last
week.
That
was a big surprise. It wasn't even connected to the asteroid.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff floating around in outer space.
Yeah.
Natural stuff like asteroids and meteors. There's also space junk.
Right.
That occasionally folks will call us and say, hey, I saw a bright flash in the sky. Can you tell me what it would be? And most likely it's space debris. But the object that came in over Russia was a fairly large meteor.
Okay.
Now, a meteor is a piece of space, natural space debris, probably a rock or ice that enters the atmosphere. And as we all know, when those objects are moving such at a terrific speed and hits the top of the atmosphere, it creates friction. And this particular object was fairly large. I heard it was about the size of a city bus.
Wow.
And it came into the top of the atmosphere. Some of the pieces, as it broke up, did reach the ground, but most of it exploded in a big fiery clap of thunder about 30 miles up above the surface. And that shock wave, the sound and the shock wave, like, was the biggest lightning strike on steroids you could ever hear. And it blew out all those windows. But it never actually, the bus size piece never actually hit the ground. It was a much smaller piece, allegedly went into the icy lake up there in central Russia. But they're still collecting fragments. Once it hits the ground, those pieces that you pick up off the ground, those are called meteorites. So a meteor could go into the atmosphere and totally vaporize and never hit the ground. But the little pieces you pick up, those are called meteorites. Now, an asteroid is the one that NASA was tracking. It was a fairly small one, about the size of a football field. It doesn't seem small, but when you think of the size of a football field compared to the size of the Earth, it was pretty tiny. They're able to track them that small. That one missed the Earth, of course. But if that had hit somewhere on land, the probably unimaginable consequences. But meteors enter the atmosphere 5-6 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
But the Earth is covered by 70% water, so
right.
probably a lot of them don't ever get seen.
Right, right. But the Russian thing was kind of an anomaly.
Yes, it was, and it happened the day before the asteroid goes by, so there's this automatic, they must be connected.
Right, and then there were reports of one seen over California and Cuba, so then everybody's thinking, well, what's going to happen here?
It's amazing when you open your eyes and look up.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much that goes on above the ground that when people actually do look,
right,
they start seeing these things.
Yes,
and
yes.
it's, wow, I think I saw something.
Right.
Yeah, it happens all the
time.
They
just weren't in tune with it before.
Or it's cloudy.
Right.
You know, hey, did you see that meteor go overhead? Oh, no, it was cloudy last night.
Right.
Well, you missed it.
Now, pretty intense winter days we've had here so far. What do you think spring's going to look like?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. Let's see. Is it like our winter predictions? We kind of get a dartboard. We kind of you know, kind of throw a dart at the.
Well, is there something that you're seeing shaping up? I mean, are we going to look at having a you know a decent mild spring, or do you think we could be in for a bit of a rocky road?
I think it's still going to be rather rocky here
okay.
for the spring.
Okay.
My biggest fear is that. There could be a large, severe weather outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
That's always everybody's fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's based on nothing other than just a hunch.
Mm-hmm.
But the weather pattern has been pretty volatile this winter, especially late January, early February.
Sure.
A lot of big storms coming through.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of rain one day, and then it gets bitterly cold the next day, and
right.
we get all that snow. But that's fairly typical for Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
No real outlook yet for the spring.
Okay.
We haven't weighted it either way.
Okay.
My winter prediction was based on what kind of weather we had during the summer and winter, of 1936.
Oh, okay.
And those were the hottest years in Grand Rapids, the Dust Bowl years across much of the Midwest. And that was my winter prediction was
okay.
for lower than average snowfall mm-hmm. and a little bit colder than average.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting there. But there is no relationship right now to the spring.
Okay.
And the following spring. But 36 and 37 were summers of 36 and 37 were
okay.
very, very hot. So unless we get more significant rain out in the Midwest and the plains, I think it's going to be another hot summer.
Okay. Okay. Now, I remember a few years back, Nicolas Cage movie, Weatherman. It seems like you guys were always blamed no matter what. What's your experience been with the public placing blame on you? Even though you have no control over the weather, what are some of the craziest things someone has said or done related to a weather forecast you've given?
Well, most of the folks are understandable.
Sure.
They know that we don't actually control the weather. And it's most evident on Facebook when you post a forecast
right.
and someone says, so can you give me a snow day tomorrow?
Yeah.
Can you give me nice weather for my wedding next weekend? When, in fact, I think they really do know that we don't control the weather.
Sure, sure.
They're just hoping against hope that their wishes come true and that I can provide their wishes.
And wouldn't that be great?
That would
be
great.
A lot of power.
It would be 75 and sunny, you know, 3 days of the week, and all the rain would come at night. Now,
right.
That would be my ideal.
Sure.
But no, the blame is not there. No, I usually don't get yelled at too much unless I really, really, totally screw up a forecast.
Okay. Okay. So nothing comes to mind that's been outlandish or
no,
anything like
no.
that?
No, no. Now folks expect more
okay.
from us. Back in the day, you know, if we were off by 6 inches of snow, you know, that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were calling for 8 inches of snow and we got 14, okay, you know, yeah, that's all right. Now, if we're off by a half an inch of snow,
right,
we get you. Well, you said we were going to get 2.5, and I got 3. Seriously, folks, is it really that that important?
But some areas of town are certainly going to be a little bit different. I mean, you can
yes.
you drive in your neighborhood and it's pouring down, and you go 2 miles outside and there's no rain. You know,
exactly.
So everybody's getting something a little bit different sometimes,
and they want to know what's going to happen right at their house.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we'll use interstates or markers that people know about.
Right.
And will say the snow will be generally from I-96 southward.
Sure.
Well, I live in Sparta. It snowed at my house. You said it wouldn't be north of I-96.
Sure.
It's like, well, yeah, true. On a global scale, I think you're pretty close to I-96.
Yeah.
As opposed to I-5, which is, you know,
exactly,
down along the Gulf Coast.
So we talked about, you know, the kids that you work with. What advice do you have for aspiring meteorologists, you know, when it's, you know, gone from just, you know, a passing interest in weather to somebody who wants to pursue it as a career? What advice do you have?
Well, there are all types of meteorologists, jobs that you can,
sure,
you can have. Television is the most most visual,
mm-hmm,
most visible, I think the most trusted. And the biggest thing is we want to keep our viewers' trust.
Yeah.
That we're doing the best job that we can.
Mm-hmm.
Meteorologists, I think, are born. They're not made.
Okay.
If you have a passion for weather or a passion for anything,
mm-hmm,
that's what you should really pursue.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you get paid to do a job, that's great. But when it's fun, even if you don't get paid to do the job, that's even better.
Right.
And I'm doing both.
Good.
So be a television meteorologist, that's great. You want to be a scientist meteorologist and figure out how those phased array radars work and,
okay,
help us TV guys out.
Sure.
If you want to go into teaching as a meteorologist,
mm-hmm,
teaching other kids. That's where I see myself if I'm not doing television.
Okay, teaching. Okay.
You know, okay, the younger folks, you know, everything I know about weather.
Right, right, right. Lots of different areas you can go into, not just the television.
Absolutely.
This is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I've been joined by award-winning WZZM meteorologist George Lessons. Thanks so much for joining me, George.
Thanks for inviting me, Paul.